What's the universe at time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Hello, I'm Steve Miller. U.S. President Donald Trump went on an extended tirade against the media on Tuesday evening, equating reporters with traitors, calling them bad people who don't like our country. During a political rally in the Phoenix Convention Center, the president recited previous statements he made criticizing neo-Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan following the fatal August 12th clash in Charlottesville, Virginia. Ahead of Trump's arrival, there was speculation he may announce a pardon for Joe Arpaio, the former sheriff of Maricopa County, Arizona, and renowned handler on hardliner on immigration policies. Trump, however, did give a strong indication he may at some time in the future pardon the 85-year-old Arpaio, who was recently convicted of contempt of court for ignoring a judicial order to halt his immigration patrols.
You know what? I'll make a prediction. I think he's going to be just fine, okay?
There were chaotic scenes outside the venue where the rally was being held. Protesters were chanting and what appeared to be smoke bombs and fireworks being set off. Police used tear gas and percussive grenades to disperse groups of protesters, and some also fired pepper spray at crowds after someone apparently lobbed rocks and bottles at the officers. At least 74 people were injured after a train derailed in Uttar Pradesh in India, the second train accident in the northern Indian state in the last 3 days. The Kafayat Express derailed at 2:40 a.m. local time when a truck carrying sand for construction overturned in the tracks near Araria town. The train driver was forced to put on the brakes, and the impact caused 8 coaches to fall off the rails. This is VOA News. 3 young brothers have been saved by emergency services after being trapped by a magnitude 4 earthquake that struck the Italian island of Ischia. Jacob Greaves reports.
A miraculous escape and the making of one memorable family reunion. The cheers coming from fire crews as the last of 3 brothers is pulled from the rubble. They had survived hours trapped below after an earthquake hit the Italian island of Ischia on Monday night. This, the eldest of the siblings. Fire crews found his younger brothers earlier. The island has a population that swells to around 200,000 in peak summer months. Most of the damage occurred in the higher areas of the volcanic island away from the coast. Helicopters and a ferry boat have brought in extra rescue workers from the mainland. The quake hit just a few days before the first anniversary of a major earthquake that killed nearly 300 people in central Italy, most of them in the town of Amatrice.
Reporter Jacob Greaves. The United Nations Children Fund reports an alarming increase in the use of so-called human bombs by Boko Haram insurgents in northeast Nigeria. Lisa Schlein has the story.
UNICEF spokeswoman Mariksi Mercado says 83 children were forced to go on suicide missions. She says the consequences for all children are terrible. Because of their role as human bombs, she tells VOA, children are widely viewed with suspicion.
People are afraid of children who have been victimized in this absolutely appalling way. There are instances of children being ostracized by their communities.
UNICEF calls the use of children as human bombs an atrocity and says they are, above all, victims and not perpetrators. It says rejecting children who have been released by Boko Haram or have escaped simply compounds their suffering. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Panama's president says his country will begin requiring an entry visa for Venezuelans beginning in October as their homeland slips deeper into crisis. President Juan Carlos Varela said that recent events in Venezuela forced him to act to preserve Panama's security, economy, and job sources. North Korea state media released new photos on Wednesday that appear to show the designs of one or possibly 2 new missiles. Concept diagrams of the missiles were hanging on the wall behind leader Kim Jong-un when he visited a plant that makes solid fuel engines for the country's ballistic missile program. One of the photos clearly showed a diagram for a missile called the Pukyusong 3, which appears to be the latest in its Polaris series. In Washington, I'm Steve Miller.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 23rd, and here are some of the stories we're covering. The main opposition in the DRC says SADC has engineered a scheme to keep President Joseph Kabila in power.
The Congolese people have said that Mr. Kabila should leave power by the end of this year. And we cannot understand that SADC, Mr. Zuma and his colleague, saying that it's not possible to hold elections.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. A delegation from the Inter-Burundi Dialogue has called on the government to release political prisoners. A new report by UNICEF sees an increase in the use of children as human bombs by Boko Haram, and a trash dump site collapses, kills 10 people in Guinea-Conakry.
This place is a place that they used to put the trash of the whole city during more than 4 years, you know. So we have absolutely a huge mountain of trash. So some people are living just a site, and we have 30 hours raining in Conakry.
Sidya Touré is a former Guinean prime minister and leader of the Union of Republican Forces political party. The World Health Organization warns of the risk of disease following Sierra Leone's deadly mudslide, and hundreds of South Sudanese children are left to fend for themselves in Ugandan refugee camps. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The main opposition in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as the Rassemblement, is accusing leaders of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, of engineering a scheme to keep President Joseph Kabila in power. But Martin Fayulu, a member of the group, says the Congolese people have already spoken that they want President Kabila to step down before the end of this year. At their annual summit, which concluded last Sunday in Pretoria, the SADC leader said it was unrealistic to hold elections this year, as called for in the December 2016 agreement because of security challenges. On Tuesday, the group said it would send a special envoy to the DRC to help ease tension. It also called on the Electoral Commission to make public the revised electoral calendar. But Fayulu says SADC should have provided help to the commission to help it implement the 2016 accord.
We totally disagreed with what SADC has said to conclude its summit. We are saying that no one, no organization can substitute itself to the Congolese people. The Congolese people have said that Mr. Kabila should leave power by the end of this year. This is not negotiable, and we cannot understand that SADC, Mr. Zuma and his colleague, saying that it's not possible to hold elections. But why they didn't see the Electoral Commission before to see what help they need in order to organize election this year, as mentioned by the December 31st accord of last year. Mr. Kabila is doing all what he can do to destabilize Congo and then to destabilize the whole region.
This is August, and then a week from now is September. The SADC is saying that it's not possible because there's not enough time to hold the elections.
Day one, when we signed the accord, we met with SADC people last March here in Kinshasa. Why they didn't do what was in their power to help the Electoral Commission, to help Congolese people to implement the accord? Why they didn't do that? They waited, and now they come. No, they can do whatever they want. But what we are saying, if they have power, if they have advice to their friend, Mr. Kabila, they have just to tell him he has to go. This is what Congolese people want.
Mr. Fayulu, what do you make of the decision by SADC that they will be sending a special envoy to your country because of the tension that is going on? Will the Rassemblement be able to meet with the special envoy?
We always meet with people from SADC. If they send someone, we'll meet and we'll tell him what we think.
The SADC leaders also condemned what they call undue interferences by countries outside of the DRC. Is it the realization on the part of the Rassemblement that there are countries who are interfering in the affairs of the DRC?
I don't know if they really know what they are saying. The international community, they have agreed with Congolese people. They have said that we have to implement the December 31st, 2016 accord. They have issued resolution by the Security Council, resolution 2348. I can't understand what they want else, because that resolution is for the whole world, and I don't know who can come above the UN Security Council.
If elections were to be held this year, would you be ready to participate?
No, we will not participate at any election. We want fair, transparent elections. First of all, we want Mr. Kabila to release a statement saying that he will drop at the end of this year. Secondly, we want the Electoral Commission to issue the calendar. Thirdly, we want the audit of the electoral register. We then want to go to the election. But we will not accept any election that will not be transparent. But the thing is, election or no election, this year, Mr. Kabila has to go.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. A delegation from the Inter-Burundi Dialogue, led by a facilitator and former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, has ended 3 days of consultation with the Burundian government. The group called on the government to release political prisoners and cancel the arrest warrants for some opposition members to facilitate an inclusive dialogue. Moses Aviarimana has details from Bujumbura.
Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa's team ended a 3 days visit in Burundi as part of the efforts to encourage the government to participate in an inclusive regional mediated dialogue to end the political crisis that has hit the country for 2 years now. Kenny Vitisha, the Kenyan ambassador to Burundi and also part of the facilitation team, said that the Burundi government should lift the arrest warrant to some opposition leaders who were not violent.
Some of them actually took up arms. Some were sympathizers. So we need to differentiate between those who took up arms and are violent and those who are just the sympathizers, who are not necessarily violent. Those can be involved in the dialogue. So what we are requesting, if the government can give us a few on that list, so that they can be part of a process that will now make it look credible.
Burundi government said that 34 people, including the 2015 coup plotters, are under arrest warrants and should face justice. According to the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2279, only non-violent stakeholders should be engaged in the dialogue. Burundi Minister of Justice Laurentine Kanyana says that those under arrest warrants should face justice.
We have seen how the insurrection movement have been done. We have seen how the coup was done. And the people who made crimes was well identified. I think it would be a kind of irresponsibility if judicial services didn't intervene.
The regional mediated dialogue team, under the facilitation of the former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, had earlier this year made consultations with the civil society organizations, women, youth and religious groups in the country to solicit their opinions on the proposal regarding the peaceful resolution of the crisis. Burundi opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, said that the Burundian problems should be solved by Burundians and no one should be excluded.
How can we pretend that we can make peace? Why we still persecute people just because of their political belonging or thinking? It's something which is really strange and even a nonsense. If some are accused of being plotters against the regime, why should they plot against the regime which would be satisfying their aspirations?
as the country gained relative stability since last year. Grenade attacks have been frequent in the country for the last 2 months, leaving more than 15 people getting killed in the attacks. The next round of regional mediated dialogue is expected to resume next month in efforts to restore peace and stability in the country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Today is Wednesday, August 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. An opposition leader says at least 10 people were killed and dozens more injured when a trash dump site on the outskirts of Guinea's capital, Conakry, collapsed on Tuesday after nearly 2 days of heavy rain. Sidi Touré, former Guinean prime minister and leader of the Union of Republican Forces political party, says the tragedy is one that was waiting to happen. He says the government could have prevented it by setting up trash dump sites outside the capital. But he also says the tragedy is the result of poverty.
It's more than 5 people. Actually, today, this evening, we have more than 10 people who died from what I can call a trash slide. It's not a landslide. This place is a place that they used to put the trash of the whole city during more than 4 years, you know. So we have absolutely a mountain, a huge mountain of trash. So some people are living just aside, and we have 30 hours raining in Conakry.
How close is this site to the capital city?
It's absolutely inside the capital city. It's absolutely one of the neighborhoods in the capital city. I know this problem because I found a solution when I was prime minister 20 years ago, but they didn't continue to do it. And today is a real problem in the city, and it's a real social problem because you see the whole poverty, and really people die today in very bad condition for just nothing.
So whose responsibility is that to move the trash? I mean, do they collect the trash in the city and pile it up there or what?
Collecting of the trash in the city is a responsibility of the governor. But governor in Guinea is somebody nominated by the government. He's not the elected person.
Can we expect that there are going to be more fatalities?
No, we have many people who was in hospital, so the government pay for that. And, you know, it's something very difficult. So today, everybody is saying that we have to take new disposition for this problem. I think really that can be a bad opportunity, but it's an opportunity to find a way, you know, to get out of this situation of this whole trash, I think, in the city, absolutely in Conakry city, just, I think, 2 kilometers from airport.
Do I say you are a liaison between the opposition and the current government? What can you say that the opposition can tell the government?
No, I tell it today, you know, during my visit in the place, the whole radio station and television was there. We have to change, you know, the modality we work on this question, and we have to put on a new solution, because this is something we cannot accept.
Because this could be a problem in other African countries. Here in the United States, trash that is collected is sent out way outside of the city where they have landfills and they keep covering the trash up. Eventually, people can even build houses later. So I think maybe taking the trash away from the city, because that is going to help also with the diseases.
In a city like Conakry, this is the only situation. You have to take it out of the city, but you know how the city of Conakry is very long. You know, it's on 36 kilometers. But there is no other way to do it, to put it out of the city. And I see in a country like Burkina Faso, doing what you are saying about the United States, and it's absolutely something that works very well.
Sidi Touré is a former Guinean prime minister and leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces political party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. The World Health Organization is warning of additional disease risks after the mudslide that killed about 500 people last week in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. Officials have also warned of the risk of cholera, malaria, and other infectious diseases. Emergency Preparedness Officer Dr. Robert Musoki spoke to Ricky Stryak about the WHO's efforts to prevent any possible outbreak.
We are in a country where
We have had an Ebola outbreak just about ending a year back. And then we have had a big cholera outbreak previously in 2012, in which we had over 19,000 cases and over about 274 deaths in one outbreak. That was a big cholera outbreak. And then adding to that, we have had a mudslide and floods that have killed so many people. So in the wake of that, we anticipated that there is a possibility of a disease outbreak happening. And for that reason, we are tracking, reporting from facilities and communities of cases of particular diseases, especially diseases that are that tend to be amplified where sanitation facilities are poor.
You have not had any cases of cholera as of yet, correct?
No, we have not had any cases, and we are continuing to monitor the situation.
I saw also that the WHO is working with partners to provide psychological aid to those coping with trauma. How important is this, and especially in the nature of this event, where it seems that people lost many members of their family at once?
Yes, that is true. So what happened really, because I was among the first people to reach the site of the disaster on Monday morning, and I imagine so many people who have seen this and those who have, let alone, I feel as if I am affected, but how about those who have families that they have lost there? How about those who have lost all their property? And they have survived somehow, but they have lost everything that they own in life. There is a lot that is going on, and the bad thing with the psychological trauma, sometimes it is immediate onset, sometimes it does not develop immediately. So there is need to address the impact of the mudslides and also the flooding. Close to 500 people died. There are so many families that are affected in one way or another, health-wise, or loss of property, or loss of source of income, or loss of family members.
How bad was the sanitation in the area already before the mudslide?
So, of course, in the whole of Freetown has unique reasons why they have limited access to clean water. One, because of the topography, the area is very hilly. Most of the water sources are in the valleys, meaning people have to walk long distances to get water. That is one aspect to it. And when they get it, the quality of it, even before this incident, is a concern.
That was Dr. Robert Musoke, the World Health Organization's Emergency Preparedness Officer. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Freetown. The UN Children's Fund reports an alarming increase in the use of so-called human bombs by Boko Haram insurgents in northeast Nigeria. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund reports a fourfold increase over all of last year in the number of children, especially girls, being used as so-called human bombs by Boko Haram militants in northeast Nigeria. UNICEF spokeswoman Marixi Mercado says 83 children were forced to go on suicide missions. She says 55 of the children were girls under the age of 15, 27 were boys, and one was an infant strapped to a girl. She says the consequences for all children are terrible. Because of their role as human bombs, she tells VOA, children are widely viewed with suspicion.
There's an extraordinary level of tension, obviously, in these communities. And people are afraid of children who have been victimized in this absolutely appalling way. There are instances of children being ostracized by their communities, and worse. So yes, like, terrible things are happening to children after already horrific things have happened to them.
UNICEF calls the use of children as human bombs an atrocity and says they are, above all, victims and not perpetrators. It says rejecting children who have been released by Boko Haram or have escaped simply compounds their suffering. The agency notes most of the attacks are on so-called soft targets, such as markets, schools, universities, and displacement camps, and most take place in Borno State. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Hundreds of South Sudanese children separated from their parents while fleeing fighting in South Sudan last year say they have yet to be reunited with their loved ones. A majority of unaccompanied children either live alone or with younger siblings in Ugandan refugee camps with little or no support from non-profit organizations. Simon Peter Apiku has the story from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
When fighting erupted in Juba a year ago last July between government soldiers and troops loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar, violence quickly spread to Imatong State's Pagari County. 16-year-old Sekina Christine was living with her 16-year-old stepsister and an 18-year-old brother in Kerepi village. Sekina's siblings escaped from their village, but their mother remained in Imule town because she was running a business. Sekina says she's been looking after her siblings at the Agodzo refugee settlement in Adjumani district ever since they arrived in Uganda last year.
My father died in 2005, but my mother is around in Inumule. She refused to come here.
16-year-old Irene Foni says she parted ways with her mother in the confusion and chaos that followed the arrival of government soldiers at Pagari in July 2016. Irene says she has been on her own at the Agodzo camp in northern Uganda for more than a year now.
I'm just alone, nobody.
Save the Children and the Lutheran World Federation are trying to help hundreds of unaccompanied children like Irene and Sekina by constructing small houses and enrolling the refugee children in school. Sekina, her stepsister, her brother, and Irene attend the Agodzo South Primary School. Unlike Sekina and Irene, who only live with their siblings, Eunice and her sister are lucky. A woman in the camp who sympathized with the children invited them to stay with her family. Sekina says the food rations they receive are not enough to last the entire month, so they must find other means to buy food and school materials.
We sell charcoal and we pay our school fee, we'll eat.
Eimani says she must also work hard to earn some money because her scholarship covers only tuition and a little food.
They are paying the school fee plus the feeding fee, and then they bought for us the uniform. That is what they are giving for us, but soap plus the book plus pen, they are not giving it.
Afor Grace is a foster parent at the Agodzo camp. Grace says she adopted three children aged 11, 9 and 7, whom she found wandering around the settlement.
Say, where is your mommy? They said they don't know their mommy. Then I decided to ask the other one, the elder one, where is your father? They say their father is, they don't know even the father is alive because they were started, they just ran like that. Then they followed the other people, then they came. Then I decided to take care of the children.
UNHCR spokesman in Uganda, Charlie Yaxley, says nearly two-thirds of the South Sudanese refugee population is children under the age of 18, and that includes orphans and unaccompanied minors. He says supporting these children presents a huge challenge to the UN Refugee Agency and its partners. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani.
That's it for this Wednesday, August 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you to join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotin and Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer James Harmon, I'm James Butte saying have a lovely day, Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it. VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.